Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and welcome back. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to be on the air. 888-914-9149. Also, just a reminder, your time is running out if you want to be one of the lucky 200 listeners who will be receiving a free, large, hand-painted nativity set where you can show the reason for the season. Christmas is coming soon. Advent will be here first, and following that will be the Christmas season. And this would be a great way for you to evangelize and just remind yourself of why we do all this in preparation for baby Jesus. And it's a free nativity set made available by a generous benefactor. And you can be in the running to win one of these 200 free nativity sets by going to relevantradio.com/set, S-E-T, relevantradio.com/set. Plug in your name, get entered, and if you are one of the lucky 200, you will receive it. And you don't pay anything. You don't pay for shipping or anything. It's coming to you free. But this opportunity is going to be over at midnight on Friday. So please, and midnight Central Time, by the way. So please don't miss out on this opportunity to get registered, and you just might win it. Go to relevantradio.com/set. Paul in Bernalillo, New Mexico, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Patrick. An earlier caller was talking about guardian angels, and it got me thinking, since every person that was ever born has a guardian angel, is a guardian angel created for that person, or is there already that many angels in existence?
Well, we don't know how many angels God created. I think it could be safe to assume that he created more angels than there are people. And how many people are there, or however many there have been, it's hard to say. I heard one estimate that it's something like something close to 200 billion people over the course of human history, including people currently alive. But we don't know how many angels are created. I think we could safely say it's at least as many as there are human beings. So we have a guardian angel. Jesus said so. He says, be careful, you know, not to despise one of these little ones, because their angels see God in heaven. And so we have it from Jesus that these guardian angels are there. So we receive a guardian angel when we are created. So at the moment of your conception, God appointed a guardian angel to you. And then when you die, and if you go to heaven, it's said by some significant doctors of the faith, people like St. Thomas Aquinas, for example, that the job of the angel then becomes instructing you on heavenly things. And over the course of eternity, your guardian angel is kind of a companion in the sense that he has a special job to instruct you. And you learn more and more and more in heaven. Now, if you were to go to hell, God forbid, your guardian angel is not, you know, he's not docked points or penalized in any way. He just continues praising God and enjoying the beatific vision.
Oh, good. I had never heard that part. That's interesting. Well,
yeah. So, well. Okay. Well, happy to be of service, Paul. Yeah, great to talk to you. Appreciate that. How about Leo in Front Royal, Virginia? Good morning, Leo.
Yes, hello. You know, I had experience with my guardian angel, and this has to do with the question I asked, you know, do guardian angels, do they only care for one person, or do they get more persons? And what happened was, I had a German girlfriend, and she had a son from a previous German boyfriend. He was 4.5 years of age, and one Saturday when we'd take a walk in the forest, to come, he would, you know, I decided to teach him about angels. And when I got finished, little Adrian asked me in German, he says, what's your guardian angel's name? I repeated the question, my guardian angel's name. And then I heard a voice behind me say, Gabriel, a very strong masculine voice. And then he said he knew his guardian angel's name was Raphael, just like that. So, you know, that could be that they got to reveal.
Possible. Although we generally are not given to know what the angels' names are outside of divine revelation. We don't even know the names of any of the other angels other than the three who are mentioned by name in the canonical scriptures. There are others who are mentioned by name in some of the scriptures that are not part of the canon. But that's all that's been revealed to us. So I would tread very lightly there. I appreciate your story. We just have to be really respectful of the angels and recognize that they are above us in the created order, and we have to rely on them. Thanks, Leo. Appreciate it. Let's go now to Gabriella in Texas. Good morning, Gabriella.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hi there.
Hello. Hi.
Yes.
My question is, my friends and I, who have no experience with apologetics really, are holding a public rosary rally, the ones that are going on nationwide. And it has come to our knowledge that some Jehovah's Witnesses may show up. And so could you kind of give us a little bit of advice, or give me some advice about how to confront their usual arguments that they bring? And you had one time mentioned a video where you talked with a man who used to be high up in the Jehovah's Witnesses, whatever their religion. If you could just steer me towards that again,
okay,
that would be a great help.
Happy to do so. Okay, so let's start there. So that is a digital download that is called I Escaped from the Watchtower. And it was a four-hour conversation that we had professionally recorded with a gentleman by the name of Leonard Chretien. And the spelling of his last name, Chretiene, I believe it is. So he himself was rather high up the food chain when it came to being a Jehovah's Witness. He was in charge of, you know how when you drive along and you see a Kingdom Hall, like the local Kingdom Hall for the Jehovah's Witnesses? So he was like a district overseer. So he was in charge of like 40 or 50 of those or something like that. So he not only had a kind of higher status in the Watchtower, but also he was really good, and he would train Jehovah's Witnesses on how they could talk to Catholics so that they could convince them that the Trinity is not true, or that Jesus isn't really divine, and other such things. So when he himself converted back to Christianity, he had been raised Catholic, and he left and was a Jehovah's Witness for many years, and he was making his way back to the Catholic Church. And he had come out of the Jehovah's Witnesses into evangelical Protestantism. And when I had gotten to know him, I was under the impression that in due time, he was eventually going to wind up becoming Catholic again. I kind of lost track of him, so I don't know where that all ended up. But for those 4 hours, we covered, it was him doing most of the speaking, specific arguments that they use, specific false prophecies that the Watchtower has repeatedly failed to prophesy accurately, and many other things, including like techniques that Jehovah's Witnesses often use. And so it was very illuminating. And it's the kind of thing that if you're going to spend time talking with these good people, then you should know some of the things. So that is something that what I can do is retweet on my Twitter feed the link to that so you can find it. If you don't want to go that route, then you can just simply go to the show page, relevantradio.com. When you click on links, then you're going to click on my website, and then just go to the store section, and you'll find it there. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
Oh, I just thought of something else. I also strongly recommend that you get a copy of Jim Burnham and Father Frank Chacon's book called Beginning Apologetics 2, How to Answer Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. This is a great resource. I had forgotten about it. And the thing that reminded me of it was that I wrote the foreword to this book long ago, about maybe, I don't know, 30 years ago or something like that. So if you want kind of like point by point Bible apologetics on how you can talk to these people, that would be definitely something that you'd want to get. Okay.
Okay. Patrick, can you give me the authors one more time and the name?
Yes, Jim Burnham,
B-U-R-N-H-A-M,
Jim Burnham. And okay, we'll just leave it at that. And the name of the book is Beginning Apologetics 2, the number 2. Uh-huh. You want that particular one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Patrick. We love you guys. Keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you. And you know what you might want to do, Gabriella, is get some bumper stickers from Relevant Radio. Just go to relevantradio.com. And you can order some bumper stickers. And maybe let these Jehovah's Witness folk, if you do talk to them, let them know about Relevant Radio and invite them to listen as well. And maybe they will.
That is so providential because I just ordered my Relevant Radio bumper stickers last week.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Well, that makes me happy. And I'd love to hear how this turns out. Hopefully it'll be a very nice, happy, friendly, pleasant conversation that will lead to good things. Let's go now to Melanie in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Patrick. I just had a quick question. There's a show called Long Island Medium, and from what I've gathered is like she speaks to spirits that have crossed, and she is a devout Catholic, and her parish allows this and accepts it with open arms. But as my understanding, you're not supposed to seek anybody that can speak to spirits or like a psychic or anything like that.
Right.
Have you heard of the show?
Oh, many times over the years. And I think it's foolishness on stilts, if you ask me. And I think that I don't know this lady. I've never met her. And she, you know, she's very successful from what I understand. But it's extremely foolish to imagine that you can consult a medium and be in touch with personages, entities, when this is forbidden by the church. And I'll read to you what the Catechism says. This is paragraph 2116. All forms of divination are to be rejected. Recourse to Satan or demons, conjuring up the dead, or other practices falsely supposed to unveil the future. Consulting horoscopes, astrology, palm reading, interpretation of omens and lots, the phenomena of clairvoyance, and recourse to mediums all conceal a desire for power over time, history, and in the last analysis, other human beings, as well as a wish to conciliate hidden powers. They contradict the honor, respect, and loving fear that we owe to God alone. So right there in black and white, the church is really clear. Stay away from these things. And that includes so-called mediums. Now, either it's just a really elaborate magic show and there's some gimmick to it. I've never seen it, so I don't know. Or, and I suspect this is probably far more likely, she is being talked to or informed of information by demonic spirits. So it's just to me, it seems like a very black and white thing. The church says, nope, stay away from that stuff. So I wish that this weren't happening, but it is, and it's a successful show. Apparently it's been running for many years. And that's what I can tell you. That's what the church says.
Okay, yeah, because I know that she says that she's devout Catholic and her church, you know, the parish and the priest accept it with open arms. I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know how that is. But I just wanted to get your input on it. So should I go to confession about, because I watched a couple of the episodes, should I go to confession that I kind of watched it, or is it because I'm not seeking her out myself?
Right. No, I don't think that's matter for confession unless your conscience is bothering you. And if it were bothering you, it might be because you thought, well, there's something wrong and I really shouldn't be watching this, but I'm going to watch it anyway. So in that sense, if you feel as though you thought it might be sinful and you said, well, I'm going to do it anyway, then yeah, I would bring it up to confession. But if you just innocently turned it on and wasn't sure what it was and you're looking at it and what is this thing and you watch another episode or two, I don't think that's matter for confession because I don't see where there's a sin involved there. But
okay.
You know, now that you know that the church forbids this, just like it forbids horoscopes and all that other foolishness, now that you know, then it would be a different story, you know. Anyway, I hope that's helpful to you, Melanie. I really do. Let's go to Dan now in Ohio. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Patrick. Hey, I got a tough one for you. Just became aware of something yesterday. My daughter plays on a sports team with another girl that's from a different school. So she knows of her, but she doesn't know much about her family dynamics. Apparently she has a sister who's 2 grades older that is transitioning into a boy. Last night I just heard that, her teammate said that her so-called brother, likes my daughter and, that her teammate and another teammate, are kind of like, seems like matchmaking. And my daughter, being a younger girl, 6th grade girl, you know, likes the idea that a boy likes her. She thinks that's cool, but she doesn't know that this person is not actually a boy, that it's a girl transitioning to a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it angers me because I feel like there's some cruelness between these two girls, knowing that it's a girl transitioning into a boy, and then kind of almost kind of setting her up in a way because she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And some people do know.
Why don't you just tell her? Why don't you just tell her? I mean, your dad, you're like the air traffic controller and you see everything that's going on. Why not just directly intervene and not only put a halt to it, but let your daughter know what's going on?
Yeah,
why not do that?
I mean, my only fear with that, Patrick, is being a sixth grade girl and having, she consoles to my wife about things and being a little bit upset that she's not noticed by some of the boys, like some of her other, her friends are, but I think that could be from other things, just family, a lot of other siblings being close proximity a lot. But I worry about it, be like, well, why does this type of person find me attractive, but nobody else, you know what I mean? And that would be my only fear of squashing that right now. And
Dan,
saying, just being
Dan.
Very upfront with her. And
Dan.
I don't, is it age appropriate? I mean,
Dan.
It used to not be, but you know, she's sixth grade.
Dan.
So now I got to say, well, this boy is not a boy. He looks like a boy.
Dan.
He looks like a, you know.
Dan.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. You've got to be a good dad. I'm sure you're a good dad, but you've got to exercise your fatherly authority here. And number one, explain to your daughter what's going on and put a mm-hmm. stop to this. Because if you don't, then you're partly responsible for the mayhem that's likely to ensue. You have every right as her father to intervene in a situation like this. She's your daughter. You need to protect her.
Oh, yeah. No.
And yeah, don't be afraid that she might feel like, well, nobody's attracted to me. This person's attracted to me. In other words, you're not doing her any favor by letting her be blissfully unaware of what's going on. And if anything, I would think that if she figures it out that her dad knew about this for who knows how long, weeks or months or whatever, and never said anything to her, that's going to add a whole level of weirdness to this situation.
Yes.
How come my dad didn't say anything? So it seems really clear to me as a father. So just you and I, two guys, two fathers talking it over. And as a father, I would not hesitate to intervene and sit her down and talk to her and hug her and tell her how much you love her and how beautiful she is and all the things that every daughter wants to hear from her father because they're true. Tell her all that and tell her that she, you know, she is a beautiful person in herself and in due time. For some people, it happens later, some it's sooner, but it doesn't matter when the time is right and she is ready to start doing that. And by the way, she's in the sixth grade. She's not ready for that. The last thing she should be worried about is, you know, going out on dates or anything. I mean, it's natural for adolescent boys and girls to start thinking about, oh, he likes me, or does he like me, or does she like me? That's natural for them to start thinking about that. But she's nowhere near being old enough for it to become anything more than that. And so as part of your fatherly guidance, I would let her understand, help her to understand that in this life, she's going to meet all kinds of people. And more now, there will be those who think that they can change their sex, they change their gender, even though they really can't. But I mean, that's just part of the bigger picture of helping prepare her for a world in which she's going to be seen as a love interest, you know, and other things that are not good. But now is a perfect opportunity for you to begin guiding her in doing this. That's what I would recommend.
Gotcha. I mean, don't misunderstand me. Definitely we're doing something. My wife already said, you know, just want the age appropriate, right? Well, this is somebody that's 2 years older than you. So it's not appropriate at all for him to contact you or for you to talk to him because this is not age appropriate. But
it's inappropriate in every way that I can think of. You're right. I agree with you.
Right.
It is. It is very inappropriate.
Say, take it the next step further and just call it out what it is and just let her know like up front, because I know that'll change friendships and just that feeling of being lied to by a couple of teammates that know full well that this person is not a boy.
That's so true. But to me, it seems self-evident. It just seems blindingly obvious what you need to do. And who cares what these punky adolescent kids think? You know, who cares? Life's too short. And, you know, your dad, you've got a role to play here. I'm sure you're a great guy, Dan. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm not grinding on you. But if you're asking for my advice, that's what I would advise. All right. Thanks, Dan. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Well, I am under pressure, that's for sure. I'm getting a deluge of your emails, and I thank you for that, about the Marriage Act and all the things that we've discussed about it, surrounding it. And a whole lot of you who are writing in to say, thank you for talking about this. Finally, we're actually hearing something about it. Okay, that's great, and I appreciate it. But I'm also under pressure because I'm getting emails for one or two people anyway, saying, I can't understand what you're saying. It's going over my head. And you need to be more, you know, like explicit. And here's the thing. I can't be. No, I don't.
No, you don't.
No, I really don't. I don't want that on my karmic record. No, I really don't. See, here's the thing. For the one or two of you who have said, it's going over my head, what you're saying, I don't understand it. You might as well not even talk about it because it's just, I can't speak about that in any explicit way. I just can't. So please understand, there are young people listening and we have to respect that. And so to the extent that I do talk about it, I have to speak about it in an intentionally vague way. But if you're thinking about what I'm saying, it should make sense to you. Please understand, it's not for lack of, you know, me being able to be more specific. It's just that I can't under the circumstances. So that's the pressure.
I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
No, you really don't. Where have those ladies been? I haven't seen them in a while.
You want more? You want more?
No, I don't. No. That right there is enough. That'll hold me for a while. So, okay.
Yes,
so do you understand now? I agree. So I can't dumb it down. Because if I dumb it down, then I'd be dumb because I would be, you understand what I mean. And I'm glad you do. Thank you. Cut me some slack on this one. Let's go to George in Fresno, California. Hi, George.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Patrick,
what
is the likelihood or how would it work for somebody that's in a state of mortal sin? How likely are they to be heard by the angels, God, or the saints?
Well, there's two ways, I think, anyway, to look at it. And that is if you're in the state of mortal sin and you don't care and you're not repentant, then the Bible says that God doesn't hear your prayers. In other words, you're not praying sincerely because you don't really care about God if you're in the state of mortal sin and you're not repentant. So John chapter 9, verse 31, we know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. And this is an example of what I'm talking about here. Now, that was a question that was posed to Jesus, but he doesn't refute it. So he doesn't say, no, that's wrong. That's not right. You know, there is a truth to that, even though the person who was asking the question was trying to set Jesus up. There still is truth there. So that would be one way to answer your question. But another way is God definitely hears your prayers if you're in the state of mortal sin and you're repentant. Because if you weren't able, if God didn't hear your prayers, we would all, as I always say, I say the same thing every time a question comes up, we would all be doomed. You could never get right with God. You could never get out of the state of mortal sin. You could never be forgiven if God didn't hear your prayers while you're in the state of mortal sin. So in that sense, yes, he does hear your prayers, but what predicates the yes or the no is, are you sincerely sorry? Or are you just trying to game the system and get something from God because you're praying to him? Or are you really sincerely sorry? In which case, God is right there with forgiveness and restoration. So it depends whether it's a yes or no answer on that situation, that circumstance. You see what I mean, George?
Yeah, I get that. I totally see it. What about that habitual sin that constantly brings you down and having to have you confess every other weekend?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is something that you should continue to confess. But remember that part of the confession, the sacrament of confession, is that you have a firm purpose of amendment. And what that means is not that you're going to be Superman all of a sudden and you'll never fall in the face of temptation, but you have to make an act of the will in which you say to the Lord, Lord, you know I'm weak, you know I'm prone to this sin, especially this sin, and I need your grace or I'm not going to make it, and I don't want to commit this sin anymore, Lord, and I'm going to do everything I can to avoid being in the near occasion of sin. And so that means you might have to reorder your life. It might mean, depending upon what the sin is, you might have to ditch your smartphone and get a dumb phone where you can't actually go online if that happens to be the sin. If it's a person or a place or a thing that is leading you into sin, then you have to get rid of those things. You have to be ruthless, and I mean ruthless with yourself, because the devil will be far more ruthless with you in hell, that's for sure. So in the meantime, as Jesus said, if your eye or your hand or your foot causes you to sin, then pluck it out or cut it off. For it is better for you to go into eternal life missing an eye or a hand than it is to go with your eyes and your hands into the eternal fire of hell. So Jesus is giving you like a really radical solution. Not literally plucking your eye out. All of us would be without eyes and all of us would be without hands. It is really easy to sin with your eyes and your hands. So he didn't mean it in a strictly literal sense, but he meant it literally insofar as you have to be ruthless. And if you have that level of commitment, indeed, if you fall back into that sin again, okay, that's what the sacrament of confession is there for. But you have to make that honest effort. You have to be willing to go to any length necessary in order to avoid committing this sin once you know that it's a sin. And then in the meantime, if you're struggling with temptation, or if you fall back into sin, pick yourself up, go back to the sacrament, and keep on trying. And God's grace is what's going to be doing it in you, but you have to cooperate with that. But on the other hand, if you're just saying, well, you know, this is habitual sin, and I always do this, and I don't like it, but yeah, I'm not really doing anything to get myself out of it, that's a real problem, because God is hearing your prayers and he's giving you the solution to it. But if you're not willing to take the solution, then it's sort of futile on your part, isn't it?
Yeah, perfect. It is a two-way street. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome. I appreciate your phone call. 888-914-9149. How about Aaron now in Hastings, Michigan? Good morning, Aaron.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I've noticed myself, especially after I moved to Hastings, dealing with a lot of indecisiveness about my faith. What I mean by that is doing like a going from Catholic to the Sede Picante to the Protestant churches and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be doing that anymore.
Right.
How would I overcome that?
Well, I don't know you, so obviously there are things, I'm sure, about your circumstances and your personality and things that would play into it. So I can only speak at a general level, but my advice would be get plugged in at your parish, go to Mass as often as you can, go to Mass certainly every Sunday, register for envelopes, and nowadays many parishes are taking donations by electronic means, which is a good thing to do. But my point is, get involved in your parish and start living a consistent sacramental life. Have a program of life where you say, for example, I'm going to go to confession, whether I need to or not, once a month or every 2 weeks, or set some kind of a reasonable schedule for yourself. Go to Mass, participate in the things going on in the parish, maybe volunteer to serve in some way. You could be an usher, you could be a lector, you could help out cleaning the church. In other words, get involved and live as a Catholic and be based in your parish. And in addition to that, of course, do the things that the church says you should do in your own life to cultivate love for God and love for neighbor. So pray your rosary every day, read your Bible. If there's a Bible study at your parish, I would check into that. In other words, what's the old saying? Idle hands are the devil's workshop. So maybe the reason you're bouncing around the way you are is because you just haven't settled down and you haven't gotten busy and productive and engaged. And because you're not busy and productive and engaged, you're sort of tossed around wherever the breeze blows you or wherever your thoughts drift from 1 week to the next. So I would batten down the hatches, get plugged in, get committed, live a Catholic life, serve, be occupied, and I think this tendency will probably start to go away because you'll be anchored, and you'll be anchored in the right place, by the way, in your local parish.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome. Call me in a couple of months, Aaron, and let me know if my advice worked for you. I think it will. 888-914-9149. Now we're going to go to Pat in Pennsylvania, somewhere in the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm outside of Reading, Pennsylvania.
Ah, okay. Very nice.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, would your book, Pope Fiction, be the best book to give to someone who studies scriptures all the time, but it doesn't believe in going to church and is anti-Catholic and has some real misperceptions about the popes? This is my grandson. I want to send him the best book I can about it.
So is the Pope, is that issue the sticking point for him, or is does he just have a general disregard for the Catholic Church, or is that the real issue for him?
It's one of the, I asked him the question, I said, well, what's your biggest objection to the church? And so he thought about it, and then he said, well, the idea that you think the popes are infallible all the time. And I said, well, that's not what we teach. And so I straightened him out on that. But I thought it might be a good idea to send him a good book about what we do, you know, what we do believe about the popes.
Got it. Well, that's why I asked you those questions, because I didn't want to say, yeah, that's the best. I mean, every author is going to say, yeah, my book's the best book to read. But if his concerns were more broad, then I would say that might be a good book, but it's not the best book. But in this case, it may indeed be the best book. And that is because I devote a lot of time to explaining what papal infallibility is and isn't. And so it could be that his rejection of the Catholic Church is predicated upon an erroneous understanding. Like, he thinks the Catholic Church teaches that the popes can never be wrong about anything, and that's not true. Or he might think that the Catholic Church thinks that the Pope is inspired by God, and that's not true. Or he thinks, you know what I'm saying? It could be any number of misconceptions. And that's what that book is designed to do. It's designed to clear up 30 distinct misconceptions and myths about the papacy. So if that's the real issue for him, then yeah, I think that would be a good book to get him. I'm biased, of course.
Okay. All right. I just want to say one more thing. I have a daughter in New York who was converted to the church through your book, Surprised by Truth.
Oh, that makes me very happy. Praise God. I'm happy to hear that she's come home.
Yes, indeed.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you, Patrick.
Take care.
Hey, Patrick.
You know, Pat's call reminds... Yeah, no, sorry.
No, go ahead, go ahead. I just have a couple of
emails. Oh, I just want to...
You have a second.
Oh, okay, great. So, yeah, I'll be real quick, but I just... It occurred to me just a moment ago when I was talking to Pat about that book, Pope Fiction. Pope Fiction, it sounds a lot like a movie by a similar sounding title, but it's not the same thing. Pope Fiction, Answers to 30 Myths and Misconceptions About the Papacy. And in the first half of the book, pretty much all biblical arguments that are raised against the papacy by Protestants and others. So, but what it made me think of is that one time I was in conversation with a prominent Protestant critic of the church. And he said, oh, he says, when you came out with that book, Pope Fiction, he says, oh, that's such a great title. I wish I had thought of it first, because then I could have written a book against the Catholic Church and called it Pope Fiction. But you got to the title before I did. So I said, hey, that's how the cookie crumbles, man. That's right. I'm glad I got to it first. But Pope Fiction is the name of the book, and your local Catholic bookstore would have it. So you had an email or two, huh?
I do. This one's from Joan. This just came in, and you were talking to Dan before the last break, and Dan had the...
I remember Dan.
Yeah. Was his daughter, what, 10 or 11?
Sixth grade.
And there were some girls that were trying to ship, I think that's what they call it when they put two people together, a transgender older child that was like 12 or 13.
Right.
Oh, that's so young.
And Dan called in for some advice on what to do.
Right. So that was a little backstory. So here are the emails about that. This is from Joan, and she says, thanks for the strong answer to Dan. I don't see why any real teammates would do something like that unless they are mean girls, and therefore stay clear of them. I could not agree more with that.
They're toying with her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're not mean girls. Quote there. I mean, that's, I don't know if you know, it's an old movie about mean girls that do.
I was probably reading the Bible when you watched that
feeling.
Movie.
I had a feeling. All right. And then I have another one here. This is from.
Thanks, Joan.
Yeah. Thank you, Joan. Well said. Miss Reagan. I'll just call her that. And she says, wow, Patrick, I don't think that dad heard a word you said. First of all, an 11 or 12-year-old is too young to be dating, and I think that this dad is more interested in his daughter being liked and fitting in. And, you know, I kind of had that same thought that maybe the dad just wants the kid, and he just wants her to be happy and to like him, which I can understand being a parent of kids that same age. You know, it's not fun being in the house when your kids think you're awful because you're not playing along with this new current.
Yeah, you're the dad. You're being the dad, and you have to take. Sometimes you have to take a very unpopular stand, but you're doing it because you love your children. And if they don't understand it or they don't like it, I've been there, done that. I see what you mean, Cyrus. But well, and who is that one from? That was from Miss Reagan. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So yeah, thank you for the emails. A lot of emails coming in today.
Tons. And thanks for reading those, Cyrus. Appreciate it. We will get back to more of your phone calls and your emails on the other side of this. But don't forget, if you want to be one of the lucky 200 listeners who will receive a free, and I mean free, beautiful, large, hand-painted nativity set, you have to go to relevantradio.com/set, S-E-T, and register for this drawing. If you wait, it's going to be too late by the end of the week. So Friday at midnight, the door closes. So go there now and register, and you just might win it. Big, beautiful, hand-painted nativity scene, because Jesus is the reason for the season. Go to relevantradio.com/set. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Great things happening here. See how excited Cyrus is. Great things happening here on the Patrick Madrid Show on Taco Tuesday, as per usual. Let's go to Ronnie now in Mount Morris, Wisconsin. Hi, Ronnie.
Hi, Father. How are you doing? My question is, who's the strongest man in the Bible?
I'm not a father, by the way. I'm not a priest, but I am a father. I have 11 kids, but I'm not a priest. I would say Jesus Christ, hands down. Jesus Christ, hands down.
Yeah, but he's God as well. I'm talking about man only. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, in that case, how do you define strong? Strong in what way?
Well, everybody I ask says Samson, but I disagree with people, and I kind of disagree with the Catholic Church on it, because my take is that because of the grace, the three graces of Jesus and the three graces of the Virgin Mary, I think when we look at the Nativity, we forget that Joseph is on the right-hand side of God, which is the baby Jesus. And because God commands Joseph to protect his wife and his son, Joseph is the strongest man in the Bible, in my opinion, because he's been given God's grace and he can actually destroy a Roman legion because he carries the staff of Moses.
Okay, fair enough. The staff of, well, we don't have to go into the biblical typology, but fair enough. I would not disagree with you that St. Joseph was indeed a very strong man. Now, obviously, physically speaking, there are men who are stronger than others, but the real strength that really matters, I could agree with that, sure.
Yeah, the grace is what I'm talking about, kind of like what we're missing now in today's world. But, you know, I just wanted to share that with you, and I appreciate your program, and I really like it. So thanks for taking my call, and everybody have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Ronnie. Bit early for that, but I get what you're saying. Thank you. And one thing that you might enjoy reading, in fact, I have a feeling you will enjoy it, is called Redemptoris Custos, and that is an apostolic exhortation that was written for really all about St. Joseph. And so if you're interested, Pope John Paul II, he composed this as a paean to St. Joseph, and he talks about his mission, what does the Bible say about him, what was his role, how did he do what he did. And so since you have such a high regard for St. Joseph, which is wonderful, check that out. It's available online. So if you just type in Redemptoris, R-E-D-E-M-P-T-O-R-I-S, next word is Custos, C-U-S-T-O-S, or just look up Pope John Paul II, St. Joseph, and you'll find it that way. And it's very edifying, and I think you'll like it. Thank you. Let's go to Gabrielle now in Albuquerque. Hi, Gabrielle.
Hi, Patrick. I'll try to make it brief. We have five kids, and one of my oldest is my son. The rest are girls. He lives in another state, and I think part of the reason he lives there is because he chooses to lead a life that he knows is not right. He's leading a homosexual life. He's living with another man. This weekend is my daughter's wedding. It's very exciting. We're very happy. But he recently is so-called engaged, I guess. And he hasn't told myself or my husband because he knows we disagree on this. But he, of course, has told my children. His sisters, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And so he's coming into town, right? And one, I guess I just want your opinion on it. I don't know what to
say. How old are your other children?
My youngest is 19.
Okay.
I have a 19,
so these are
21,
young adults.
23. They all are young adults, all of them.
Okay. And what is your main concern, Gabrielle, that he would be disruptive, or he would sort of flaunt this relationship in front of the family, or what's the root concern here?
Right. So the rest of the family thinks, besides my children, they kind of try to keep the peace with it instead of saying anything. But the rest of my husband's side of the family is okay with this. And they think that we're mean because we don't accept this. I guess my fear is he's going to come into town and I don't want him to make it about him. You know, everybody, we pray the rosary with my father-in-law, and he's always praying for Richie, which is good. I pray for Richie too, but I feel like he's praying for him for different reasons. And I know he is, because he tells us that we need to accept him and just, I guess, I don't know what I need from
just
you.
Live with it? Well, I can imagine how your mother's heart is grieving over this situation. And so, first of all, you have my deep empathy for what you're going through right now. My advice is usually the same thing when this question comes up. So if you don't mind me saying again what I've said before, I really do mean this. Obviously, you want to show love and compassion to your son. You love him, and nothing will change that. And even if he were a mass murderer, you wouldn't approve of what he's doing, obviously. But it wouldn't change the fact that you love right. him and that your heart breaks for him when he does things that are going to mess up his life and worse yet, even perhaps destroy it. So I would say first bit of advice is in your way of speaking to him, in your way of dealing with him, let him know that you love him and you will never stop loving him and you always embrace him as your son. And because you love him and because you are truly compassionate, you're going to tell him the truth. You'll never not tell him the truth. And for those in your family who think, oh, you're just being mean, well, that's their laziness speaking. That's their moral laziness speaking. They're too lazy to do the right thing because they're fearful of losing human respect or they're afraid of a confrontation. I don't like confrontations. I like to avoid confrontations whenever possible. They're not fun. And if I can avoid a confrontation, I will. But sometimes you can't avoid a confrontation. Sometimes you have to just say it like it is. Now, obviously, don't be brutal. Not that you would, but I mean, for those listening, don't be brutal. Don't be harsh. Be loving. But as St. Paul says, speak the truth in love. And that often will involve people getting ticked off. So sometimes we have to brace ourselves that that may be the case. But I like what you said, Gabriel. He's coming into town, not because it's, you know, it's his show. It's your daughter's show. It's her wedding. This is her big day. Yeah. And so I hope that he won't do something that would be provocative or hurtful to the family and all of this. And maybe your daughter could just mention to him ahead of time, hey, just can you just kind of keep it toned down and don't, you know, because we want this to be a happy time for everybody. Yeah. And maybe he'll listen to that. But you're not wrong yeah. for being right. You're not wrong for being right. And it doesn't mean you don't love him. It doesn't mean you're not compassionate. So hang in there.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. These family fault lines can be really painful. And the Lord understands that. So keep asking him for the graces necessary to make the situation as good as it can possibly be. And he'll give them to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. God bless you. Chin up. It's going to be okay. Let's go now to Kate in Chicago. Hi, Kate. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for all you do. How do you remain so calm in the face of all of the anti-Catholic sentiment that you encounter or all the Catholic hatred out there? You are handling these people so well. I just get angry. How do you do it?
Well, you know what my secret is, Kate? I don't take it personally. It's not me that they hate. It's not me that, you know, it's not about me. It's just that they have some really strong feelings about the Catholic Church. So that's probably the biggest part of the answer is I just don't take it personally. And if I don't take it personally, then I have a lot more reason to not get angry because, you know, if I can be helpful to somebody and they are interested in a discussion, that's great. And I also don't want to drive anyone away by being rude or obnoxious. And I've learned the hard way when I have been rude and obnoxious that obviously doesn't work. So I try to do, Kate, and I'm not by no means perfect at that, that's for sure. But as you know, Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. People to approach me if I were having a disagreement with them, you know.
Well, thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that. We'll go now to Greg in Lodi, California. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Patrick. I was wondering, when we pray for those in purgatory, does it make a difference for them whether we are in a state of, say, mortal sin or we've just come out of the confessional and praying for them? Does it benefit or hinder the prayer for them in any way?
Well, we can put it this way. I think that, as it says in James chapter 5, the prayer of a righteous man is very powerful in its effects. So if we use that as the sort of the baseline for this, then we could say that the less righteous a person is, and righteousness, it means several different things in Scripture, but it it primarily means being like God in his holiness. And so righteousness is being in a right relationship with God that by its very, by virtue of that very fact means that you are holy to a certain extent. So as we read this in James 5:16, the prayer of a righteous man has great power in its effects. Well, the prayer of a less righteous man has less power in its effects, and the prayer of an unrighteous man has no power in its effects. So if you're in the state of mortal sin, I think it's a good thing that you're praying at all, but the prayer will be, I would guess, would be ineffectual because it's not a prayer from somebody who's truly seeking the will of God. If he were, then he wouldn't be in the state of mortal sin. And to the extent that you are virtuous and holy and imbued with God's grace, your prayers become more and more powerful. So if you just stepped out of the confessional and you're as clean as the wind-driven snow, I should think that your prayers would be that much more powerful in that state.
Even if it's for someone else, not for ourselves, but for a soul in purgatory, you think there would, that there would be a difference?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that I think in general, your prayer in general is going to have more or less power depending upon your righteousness. And only God, of course, knows that. But if you're in the state of unrighteousness, which is the epitome of what mortal sin is, then I can't see how your prayer would have any power at all. And I don't think there's a distinction between praying for yourself or praying for others. If anything, I think our prayers are more powerful when we're praying for other people because it's a form of helping others. And it's more about others. It's about your neighbor than about yourself. But that's just a guess on my part, Greg. Interesting question. I'm glad you asked it. Thank you. Boy, how the time goes by so fast. But I'll be back again with you, same Pat time, same Pat channel tomorrow, God willing. And between now and then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. And be sure to get registered for that free nativity set. You might be one of the lucky 200. Go to relevantradio.com/set. I'll see you tomorrow.